This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Doug McCaleb, Chief Agriculture Negotiator in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. Learn more about the benefits of the sugar industry to the nation at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with USTR's Doug McCaleb next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers produce sugar under some of the world's strictest safety, labor, and environmental standards. The industry also supports 151,000 jobs across more than two dozen states. The farmer, family, and employee-owned sugar companies pay workers fair wages and offer good benefits, including union jobs in rural and urban communities. Together, farmers and workers provide a reliable domestic sugar supply chain for both food manufacturers and grocery store shoppers. A strong bipartisan coalition in Congress supports sugar policy, which is the safety net for sugar producers in the Farm Bill. The sugar program is designed to have zero cost to the taxpayer and has the flexibility to allow for a reliable supply of sugar throughout the year. Sugar policy ensures Americans are not dependent on unreliable foreign supplies, which would displace American farmers and jobs and jeopardize domestic food security for this essential ingredient. For more, visit the American Sugar Alliance at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. U.S. agriculture has experienced a tremendous pendulum swing in income and exports as global production of agriculture products has exceeded consumption in the last several months. Doug McCaleb, Chief Agriculture Negotiator in the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, says the swing has brought challenges, but there remains opportunity for U.S. farmers.
These are interesting days, and for a farmer out there who's got a crop in the ground, there's certainly, you know, demand for domestic consumption. There's certainly bright spots out there for export potential as well. So we just, here in the administration and at USTR, are doing everything that we can to keep our work very strong internationally to continue to open up avenues of trade for our farm products.
I want to believe that the U.S. crop role in renewable fuels will play a big difference in the paradigm ahead of how much domestic demand for, say, corn, soy, and sorghum there might be for fuel and how much we'll have available for export, where we might be focusing more on byproducts. Do you see a potential paradigm shift for U.S. ag?
Well, it's interesting because, as you mentioned, we're coming off a record corn harvest, which is very, very good news. One of the pieces that drove the numbers last year was the fact that we had a lot of soybeans going into domestic crush to meet the demand there. That limited how many beans could be made available for export. So, again, strong export market. You mentioned biofuels. We have done a lot of work to open up markets for biofuels. We've gotten tariff relief. We've gotten, in the case of Japan, the ability to meet 100% of their on-road biofuel demand as well. So almost every international trip I do, I'm having a conversation with the trading partner about biofuel. So we are doing everything we can in USTR to open up windows for trade on biofuels. Certainly, farmers are going to have to make planting decisions to meet the potential marketplace out there. But yeah, you point out very well that there is competition between a very strong U.S. economy that's got the demand for a lot of that feedstock, and certainly there's a lot of interest internationally, and a lot of trading partners look to U.S. farmers as being a great source for sustainable and good stewardship planted feedstock for a variety of purposes.
The industry hasn't necessarily seen any announcements of new trade deals per se. What is the Biden administration's plan for expanding ag trade, and is that a priority?
Yeah, Jeff, as part of the 3 years of record farm exports that I mentioned earlier, We've actually gotten, for example, just in the past year, 31 countries around the globe to remove a barrier to trade, either a tariff or a non-tariff barrier to trade. All told, when you add those kinds of efforts up, that's $21 billion over the last 3 years of savings in terms of trade that had been blocked, and this administration removing that barrier to trade. So the Biden-Harris administration is about making sure that trade is inclusive, that it's fair, that we've got a level playing field out there for farmers and workers. And I think U.S. farmers are really seeing the results of that. And I'll give you just a quick example. In the case of India, just since last January, January of 2023, India removed tariffs or dropped tariffs on 10 separate agricultural commodities. Now, it really runs the gamut of the kinds of agricultural commodities. We've had several tree nuts, for example, pecan and almonds and walnuts. We had an apple tariff. The retaliatory tariff was dropped by India as well. They dropped their tariffs on chickpeas and dried lentils, which was very welcome, I know, to our pulse crop farmers here in the U.S. But also livestock as well. They reduced the tariff on turkey. Recently, they made a change removing the tariff on duck. And then there's also been some specialty crops like blueberries and cranberries that were on that list as well. So all of those changes have taken place just as the result of a bilateral discussion with India over the course of the last year. And that really gets to the heart of, I think, this administration's approach on trade, is that, you know, you can spend 4 or 5, 6 years working on a FTA or a free trade agreement. At the end of the day, a head of state, either here in the U.S. or maybe in the partnering country, can make a decision to drop out of that FTA. So at the end of the day, the farmer doesn't really see a difference after 5 years of negotiation, and then you may have a phased out tariff schedule that takes a number of years to come into effect. What the farmer sees now is just from 12 months of negotiation and work, that list of tariffs that I mentioned has already changed. It's already come into effect. So at the end of the day, you know, I think a farmer just wants to see a difference. What was things like A, and what's it look like B? What's, show me the difference between the two. And this administration's approach to partner, to work closely bilaterally with countries, to identify means of which everyone's taking away a win, that these are in everyone's best interest, that we can get some really excellent trade outcomes. The farmers are really going to see an immediate and clear effect from that. So that's really, I think, what the farmers are experiencing right now in terms of the approach that we are taking to trade.
Well, I know the industry is appreciative of the effort, but we still can't argue with the bottom line. The projections are we're going to import $200 billion and we're going to sell just shy of $170 billion. Doug, what are the headwinds? What are the things that are still in our way of achieving export growth or expanding export volume and value sales?
Yeah, Jeff, thanks a lot. So the major factor that you're seeing driving the numbers that you just mentioned, and I want to say farmers are getting crop out the door, they're exporting in really record numbers over history. Part of the factors that drive that dollar figure that you were just citing there is the fact that we have an extremely strong currency right now, and you can look across the board at every trading partner that we work with around the globe, and you won't find a strong competition for where the U.S. dollar is right now. So that means a couple of things. For a farmer who's exporting, that's a bit of a headwind for that farmer because the price in that importing country is going to look higher than it would normally. And then conversely, another country that's trying to export to the U.S. is selling to consumers that have got a strong dollar in their pocket to spend on that commodity. So what we've really seen is that, you know, the dollar figure that you're citing there for trade balance is partly affected by commodities that may not even be staples of what U.S. farmers grow. And what I'm talking about there is products like coffee, tropical fruits and juices, even distilled spirits are having are skewing that export-import dollar balance. So, again, I think that's a part and parcel of both the strong recovery the U.S. has had coming out of the pandemic, et cetera, and it also speaks to some of the difficulties in those economies that maybe haven't bounced back as quickly as the United States economy has.
So let's shift to some good news. What remains our advantage in global markets? And I bring this up as corn and soy growers offer a sustainability certification for crops. Livestock producers have similar products. Do these production means offer us a leg up against competition that may be selling in greater supply and lower price?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I travel internationally, you know, all continents, and when I sit down with a trading partner, I can tell you what some of the advantages are. Number one, the U.S. farmer has a reputation worldwide for producing highest quality, highest consistency. As you mentioned, sustainability, the inputs that have been made on U.S. farms for generations, and I'm talking soil conservation plans and implementation, water quality practices, you name it, all of that reputation precedes the U.S. farmer coming into that marketplace. So oftentimes what we see is that it's a government located in that importing country that has either a regulatory hurdle or some kind of data entry requirement that might stand as a barrier to trade in those areas. So that's why USTR puts such a focus on working toward regulatory compatibility, getting transparency from importing countries on their approaches. It's why we put such a big emphasis on holding trading partners accountable. We can maybe get into USMCA in a little bit, but all of that speaks to us making sure that that farmer with the strong leg up, as you use that phrase, doesn't get a leg down from the importing country's government on the regulatory process. So we are putting a lot of time and effort into, for example, a Taiwan trade text. We signed the first phase of that in June. We're working on agriculture chapter to get that kind of transparency and regulatory lineup there that we really need. Kenya is another example. USTR is putting a lot of effort into a trading agreement with Kenya that similarly will line up those regulatory processes. So in much of the I mentioned earlier, all the barriers to trade that we've removed are part and parcel of that as well. So, you know, U.S. has got a lot going for it. The additional investments that are being made in Climate Smart Ag over at USDA, all of that those are big assets that the U.S. farmer can help to feature what they do and how they do it. And that's all part of the bigger strategy that we've got going on right now.
Mexico has pushed back on genetically modified corn. Can the U.S. afford to give in to President Obrador's demands, even if it's only on white corn?
No, the U.S. is standing up not just for U.S. farmers, but quite frankly, we're standing up for science. You know, any biotech product, corn, soy, canola, what have you, for it to get approved, it has to go through a really thorough regulatory approval process, very stringent look from a science perspective. And at the end of the day, there isn't a crop planted that hasn't gone through a thorough risk assessment before it is cleared to move ahead. So we were troubled that the decree issued by Mexico, especially the February of 2023 decree, it turns against science and makes it more of a political question, and that's not how it works, and that is not what Mexico signed on to when they signed on to USMCA. The USMCA agreement very clearly says that, you know, trade has to be based upon risk assessment, and governments need to show that work and show the regulatory work that's been done by science, and not a political or other types of judgments being made there. So we brought a case against Mexico based upon the biotech corn decree that you mentioned, Jeff. And we've got a panel formed for that. There's been the panel membership has been named, and we'll argue our case later on this year. And we're on a schedule to get an opinion and an outcome from that case later in 2024. So this is really important for American agriculture. It's important that that we hold to science. Quite frankly, if we were to allow Mexico to, you know, pick a commodity, you mentioned white corn, and take a certain approach with it, then you're basically opening up the door to say that science is not driving trade and exports any longer, and that just can't be the way that we do business. So Canada has joined us as part of this dispute, and I want to say to a lot of your listeners, Jeff, that the solidarity that I have heard from American agriculture and, you know, farmers that don't have anything to do with corn, or maybe their product, they don't even have a biotech version of it, that all of those farmers will come up to me all around the country and just say, hey, we're with you on this, because if we allow countries to start sliding on science, on biotech, then there's all kinds of bad consequences that could lead to. So the solidarity among American agriculture has certainly been much appreciated. I think it puts us in a stronger position, and we are looking forward to this USMCA case being decided later this year, and we know we've got a very strong case. We look forward to it being completely resolved.
I would also ask, what's the status of the dairy conflict with Canada? Is that over, or does the U.S. still have an opportunity to challenge their policy?
By all means, we are going to stick with U.S. dairy until we see meaningful market access into Canada. You know, the U.S. won a case in December of 2021, and Canada's implementation of that ruling was insufficient to provide meaningful market access. This second case, the panel, disappointingly so, didn't rule in the way that we felt they should. So we are assessing our options, but, you know, U.S. Dairy farmers believed when USMCA was signed that they were going to get true market access into the retail sectors of Canada, into the food service sectors, et cetera, and they have not seen that thus far. And that's not right. We're going to continue to stick up with them until they actually see the kind of real opportunity to sell and compete in Canada as they deserve. So by no means is that over. We're going to stay on this case.
Doug, this is a very narrow-minded question, so forgive me in advance, but I'd still like to pose it and hear your response. Given India's pushback under WTO and the conflict that we have seen in the WTO agreements over the past several decades, the bold question is WTO dead, or what would it take to revive the World Trade Organization to allow economic growth and trade as it was intended?
Yeah, Jeff, I appreciate the question. I'll tell you, I just got back from Abu Dhabi. I was there for the ministerial. And I did not see evidence that would support the kind of notion you just described, and I'll tell you why. We approved two new nations to become part of WTO. It was really quite great to see Comoros and Timor-Leste become members of WTO. We had more than 70 nations take to the stage, and all they ratified the Sustainable Fisheries Agreement that WTO brokered. That was fantastic to see. You know, with respect to the discussions in the ministerial, we had the extension of the moratorium on e-commerce, which is a big deal for the U.S. economy. I'll tell you, getting into the agriculture portions of WTO, you mentioned India. There certainly were a handful, really just a couple countries, that wanted to push the ministerial toward a policy approach on public stockholding that really is not consistent with the foundation and the rules of WTO. And for your listeners, I'd like to just kind of describe that in a little bit of detail. So we all know countries can purchase commodities, they can put them in storage, they can use them for school lunch program, they might use them for domestic feeding programs. And WTO accounts for that. There's been a process all along where countries can notify and to file that they're going to do those kinds of public use of commodities for those purposes. What India and just a couple other nations were looking to do was to open that up for market price support public stockholding. You know, they would essentially purchase the commodity at an inflated rate, keep it in storage, and then if they chose to, they could dump it back on international trade markets as it might benefit their country. So, you know, I don't need to tell a farmer what that looks like. That's distorting trade. That's given a raw deal. And quite frankly, that's also hurting nations that are food insecure. Horn of Africa, Middle East, you name it, those countries don't end up benefiting from a situation where you've got a price distortion going on out there. So we had very strong deliberations on the agriculture portion. Quite frankly, we had the largest coalition with the U.S. like-minded countries that we've ever had, and we came very close to getting a text across the finish line. Unfortunately, that small handful of countries that wanted to push for the public stockholding approach prevented us from getting a agriculture portion across the finish line. But again, you know, we feel that you can have a conversation in the future, but public stockholding with domestic support needs to be the part of a broader conversation about market access, about food security, about export restrictions. So, you know, down the road here, what we want to have is a better reset of a discussion that provides all aspects of agriculture at WTO a fair shake. So what the U.S. farmer really needs can take away from that is that we've got their back, the executive branch, stood firm to stick to the rules of WTO and to not allow WTO to be weakened or any of the disciplines to be weakened as part of that process.
Well, Doug McCaleb, thank you on behalf of the industry and certainly for AgriPulse for your work on behalf of the U.S. agriculture industry around the globe. A lot of time on the road and an uphill climb on a lot of those visits. Thank you for your effort and your sincere desire to prosper agriculture. Thank you for being on this edition of Open Mic. And, Doug, it's Open Mic today. The microphone's yours.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. A real pleasure to be on a program that I have been listening to for a long time. I would just say that, you know, we discussed WTO a second ago, and one aspect of it that I didn't describe was all of the bilateral meetings that we had with trading partners on agriculture-specific topics. And, you know, there were at least nine out of a much larger group of bilaterals where we really advanced the discussion and toward outcomes that U.S. farmers and ranchers want to see. So I just came to appreciate with, you know, all the things that WTO is trying to tackle that are difficult, what a valuable forum to be able to sit down face-to-face with trade ministers and agriculture ministers and advocate and work toward more positive outcomes for U.S. farmers and ranchers. It's something that we really appreciate about WTO. And that is consistent with the broader approach that we've got to trade, and that is to work with countries to identify mutually beneficial outcomes, to remove barriers to trade where we can, to lower tariff barriers where those exist, and to get results. And I believe this administration has gotten very impressive results for American farmers out there. As I mentioned, 31 countries removed a barrier to trade, either tariff or non-tariff, just over the last 12 months. That's certainly contributing toward those record farm export numbers that we see out there. So just I hope farmers and ranchers take away that we've got their back. We're opening doors for them. Ambassador Tai here at USTR, Secretary Vilsack over at USDA, we're all part of a broader mission here, and that is to drive jobs and economic growth and to make sure that we have equitable trade out there where every farmer sees the results at the farm gate and that everyone is taking part and benefiting from trade. So, Jeff, I just really appreciate the chance to visit with you, and I look forward to seeing your listeners in person as I also travel around the country as well.
Our thanks to Doug McKaylin, Chief Agriculture Negotiator in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. Learn more about the benefits of the sugar industry to the nation at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.